Hi, I'm Allison Hess.
And I'm Stephanie Graham.
Welcome to the Thousand Islands Playhouse Podcast.
For the 2025 season, we have seven amazing productions taking place in our Springer and Fire Hall theaters.
Join us as we talk to the artists that will make this season shine and get a behind-the-scenes peek at what's happening this summer dockside.
Don't forget to tune in
to give your ears a front row seat.
See you at the theater.
Welcome to the 2025 season of the Playhouse Podcast. We're recording today on the ancestral lands of the Haudenosaunee and the Anishinaabeg peoples. We're recording on site at the Thousand Islands Playhouse, looking out at the beautiful St. Lawrence River and the Thousand Islands. My name is Allison Hess, and I am the Education and Engagement Manager here at the Playhouse. I would like to welcome back my fantastic co-host, Thousand Islands Playhouse Artistic Associate, Stephanie Graham.
Hello.
Hi, Steph. So you've been up to a lot since last season. Most recently, you directed Legally Blonde for the Theatre Calgary and Citadel Theatre, and you're in the process of choreographing Dirty Rotten Scoundrels at the Stratford Festival, which actually is opening the same week we're recording. So that's why Steph's sound might be a little bit different, because she's actually zooming in all the way from Stratford. I'm super excited to have you back. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
And thank you for taking time out of your preview week to zoom in and do this beautiful podcast.
I'm excited. And I'll be directing the upcoming Mary Poppins at Thousand Islands Playhouse and choreographing, co-directing with artistic director Brett Christopher this July and August at the Playhouse.
So you're coming, what I'm calling home, you're coming home to direct Mary Poppins. That's awesome.
I can't wait. For our first episode of the 2025 season, we're starting off with a bang with How the Other Half Loves by Alan Ayckbourn. Britain's brilliant comic genius, Sir Alan Ayckbourn, serves as a fast-paced and hilariously funny theatrical meal. This classic modern comedy is a portrait of three very different marriages that turn into a spirited game of mixed doubles involving sex, jealousy, and ingenious stagecraft. Full of clever, razor-sharp dialogue and impeccable split-second timing and twists, How the Other Half Loves promises to leave our audiences in stitches.
I'm really looking forward to this production. It's directed by Jeremy Webb, who helmed last year's hilarious Murder for Two. And I love that show. And so I cannot wait to see what How the Other Half Loves has in store. One of the things that helps this production stand out is its unique storytelling, which we'll get into soon. In the studio with us, we have two of the fantastic designers for this show, set designer Vicky Marston and costume designer Kaylin McDonald.
Welcome, and thank you for joining us for the first episode of the 2025 season.
Hello.
How are you?
Welcome.
We always like to start with a short bio to introduce you to our audience. Vicky, let's start with you. Vicky, this is your second show at the Playhouse. Last year, you designed the set for Murder for Two and have worked extensively at Neptune Theatre in Halifax, having recently set design for Hockey Mom, Hockey Dad, Marion Bridge, His Greatness, and Alice in Pantoland, and designed both sets and costumes at Grosmorne Theatre Festival and Theatre at Grenfell. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for letting me come.
And Kaylin, so this is your debut here at the Playhouse, but you have also designed for productions at Neptune, including the Neptune Mirvish co-production of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead and Midsummer Night's Dream. And you also design costumes for film and have worked on the Hallmark movie To Have and To Holiday and Escape the Usual. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
We're happy you're here. All right, Kaylin, so as we just mentioned in your bio, you work not only in theater, but also in film. Does your process differ between working in the two mediums, or is it pretty similar?
I think the very boring answer is that every show is different, and that applies to both theater and film. And so the similarities, I think there's quite a few of them, and what those similarities are going to be depends on the scope of the show, both in theater and film. So if you have a tiny little indie film and you have a tiny little theater project, those are going to be pretty similar. But if you have a really big theater project or a really big film project, those are actually probably going to be similarly hierarchical and very intense. One of the key things, though, that it comes down to is that when I design for theater, you're often working in, you know, broader strokes because you're painting for the back row. And so although you might have some of those finer details still and you want to build that full story, you're just going to approach it differently. Whereas in film, you're going to have those close-ups and it's just going to be very specific and you can't cheat things in certain ways. But yeah, basically, yeah, you're just going to be a little more aware of where your audience's eye is directed. And in film, you're going to pick that very specifically.
when you come and work at like a theater company like the Playhouse, we have a costume team. We have Jane and Jen who are fantastic. Is it a similar thing where different production companies will use the same people over and over again? Or are you finding a lot of the time it's like a completely new team that you're working with every time?
So I'm based in Nova Scotia, which is going to give you a different answer than if I was from Toronto or from Vancouver or from LA. Because in Nova Scotia, people work in theater and in film, and there's a lot of overlap. So you're kind of going to see the same faces again and again. And you do see that with shows, especially series that run. You know, if you have the same costume designer, they're going to reach out to those same people first. Whereas if it's a feature, like say a Hallmark that just sets up and is done in a month, it's just going to be kind of get her done.
Vicky, this question's for you. You work both as a set and costume designer. Do you find your work in one area affects the way you approach the other? Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, I do work both elements, but I find that I try to blend or enhance with each style or whatever I'm working on. So sometimes I do, I'm just the costume designer, and then sometimes I'm just the set designer, but there has been a couple of times where I'm doing both.
Design-wise, do you prefer collaboration or working on everything yourself? How does that feel?
I actually like collaborating. I like being a team. I like everything. We're all a team. We're all working for one outcome.
Yeah,
and what's going to be on stage. So, like, it's really nice to work with people that we... I haven't actually worked with Kaylin, but I know her products, too. It's kind of nice to see that. And Jeremy and I have worked on a couple of shows together, so that's great. And Leanne and I have known each other for a while, so we know what we can bounce off each other easily.
Yeah, I was going to ask, too, based on what Steph was saying, if it's easier sometimes when you're doing both because you don't have to have those conversations. It just happens in your brain and you're like, all right, let's move on.
Yeah, I do that too sometimes.
Yeah.
Different hats.
Yeah, and as well as being a designer, you also work as an instructor at Memorial University at Grenfell campus in props and design. Has anything that you've ever done in the classroom, has it ever, you know, you've been like, oh, I never thought about looking at it like that, and the new perspective that you get from the students, has that ever influenced any of the work that you do? Or do you find it's really like you're doing a lot of the imparting and they're doing a lot of the receiving?
In the beginning, they are like learning from me, basically. And then by the fourth year, they're free enough to go and start thinking of themselves. It's really important for them to think for themselves and not me always telling them how to do stuff. And I've always told them this, that I can give you so many bits and pieces, but you're going to have to kind of go away and learn some things on your own, because that's how we all learn.
And that sharing of knowledge is so important in the arts. I think that, you know, we are such an apprenticed business that that sharing of knowledge is so valuable.
Yeah, exactly. And I tell the students that all the time. I said, you're going to finish in your fourth year. You're going to go and learn from people, because that's how I learned. Mm-hmm. You know, you take bits and pieces from everybody that you work with.
Kaylin, in your film work, you're not only a costume designer, but costume set supervisor, costume truck supervisor. Can you tell us about those different roles that you have?
Yeah, for sure. So in film, I work a lot as a technician as well. Those are two different roles that I think if they were in the theater world, we would call them technician or costume roles. And so they're just different aspects of how we get the costumes onto the actors and all the different ways that you tell a story. So if you're the costume truck supervisor, you're at base camp, which is kind of like the roving circus. It's this, usually a bunch of trailers, and that's where you have your actors, you have one of your ADs there, and it's the base camp. It's where they get ready to go out and do their changes and stuff. And you sit, well, you don't sit, you run around a bunch all day in your giant truck. And when you go inside, it's a wardrobe. And that's where you kind of work out of, and you make sure that everyone is wearing the right thing and that they have the right breakdown, and you do all the changes, and it's quite busy. It's also a good spot to sort of liaise between the costume team at the office and then what's going on at set. And then when you're on set, you're kind of the last stand to make sure that what the designer wants, you're getting out there, because any of these technician roles, you're ultimately trying to promote the designer's vision, and they're generally trying to work towards, you know, their vision, but then also the producer's vision, the director's vision. So when you're on set, you're on all day, you're maintaining costume continuity, you're checking in on actor comfort. It's quite an active role, and you're just in it.
I love that. And I find that's such an interesting difference between like theater and film. Can you explain a bit to our audience what is continuity when you're talking about doing a film?
So because a film is not going to be shot in the same order of scenes as how when you watch it, so you could shoot the end of a fight scene a week before you shoot the actual fight scene. So you know that, okay, they're going to be bruised and tattered and he's going to have a scab and it's going to break through his right knee jean and you have to have dirt there. And then a week later you go back and you're doing different phases of that fight. So you need to know, okay, this is the pair of jeans we end up with. Here's the five pairs of jeans, and you're making sure that it all makes sense for the different scenes. So at no point does he suddenly have a clean pair of jeans on in the middle of the fight. Or a very basic version might be, you know, you see this sometimes in movies where the collar is untucked and then it's tucked and then it's untucked. And so you just want to make sure that it looks as if it's happening for real.
That must be so much to track.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I have a lot of respect for script supervisors because they're doing that, but it's not just for costumes. They're doing it for the movie as a whole, and they are immensely talented.
I was going to say, I think that's always such an interesting thing because theater, we get to tell a story from beginning to end, mm-hmm. and film is out of order. And I think for me, I liked the sort of beginning, middle, and end. I know that's a very different skill set to be able to jump in the middle of a story and then as actors do film in that way. It's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of respect for both talents. It's also, I think, a challenge that maybe people don't recognize on the film side is to be able to perform live. You know, you don't get, if there's a boo-boo, oh well, you're on stage with your team. You know, to do it live and to just go and do it in front of an audience every night is one very intense skill set, but then to jump in and not have that continuity and to go, oh, I've lost my mom today, but I have no build-up to get there, to that scene, is a very different skill set. So yeah, for people who are really well-practiced in their craft, it's great.
Yeah, on both sides of the camera and mm-hmm. on audience.
Yeah.
This next question is for Vicky. One of the great elements and challenges of How the Other Half Loves is the use of the stage. Alongside needing to create two homes in the same space, there's a lot of specific set pieces and spaces that are needed for the show to work. How did you approach that in your design in order to delineate between the two homes, give the set all the elements the action requires, and still add your personal touch? Can you take us through your process?
There's so many balls in the air with this show. And I mean, I think when the audiences see it, they'll get it. But, you know, I see the beautiful set you've made and all the things that have to happen. And
I wish you'd seen the first model.
Oh, yeah?
I really do. By the first couple of days, it was a pile of pieces of paper.
Oh, my gosh.
I just go, no, that's not working. But it's a complicated show. It is like jamming two houses together or two rooms together is really challenging, and how to make that. And what I finally decided was that the Phillips are the younger, trendy kind of couple. So I was going for something that was from the 70s that would be what we call mid-century modern. The British call it festival style.
Oh, cool.
Instead. So I was going for that kind of thing. Yeah. And then for the Fosters, they're a little bit more stuffy, a little more traditional. And so I kind of went with shabby chic, chintzy kind of feel. And so getting my head around all that stuff and keeping them separate was really complicated for a long time. And then I just kind of went, okay, I'm doing this house now, and then I'll do this house later. And
so almost working on them as separate houses in your brain and then
mashing them together.
Oh, cool.
Is what it was.
Very
so the
cool.
whole smash up with the glue that kind of hold them together kind of thing.
So when you're looking and reading through the script, you know, you read through and you're like, oh, well, there's a dinner scene and we need a very specific kind of table. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, do you have like a list where you're like, okay, we need to have a couch that they can do this on. We need to have a table that this can happen with. And you go through that. And then how do you mash that with the vision that you have of the space itself?
Most of the furniture was easy for me to envision what it was going to be, like the couches and some of the chairs and what that was going to be. It's then when Jeremy says to you, I'd like things to be more mashed together. Can we have the two coffee tables be joined somehow?
And so oh, cool.
I took the traditional one and a mid-century modern one and we put them together. And then for the table, all of a sudden he looks at me and he says, I'd love it to be able to spin. And I said, yeah, let me just think about that for a few minutes and I'll get back to you. But they still had to be two styles of tables put together and spin at the same time.
So did you work closely with the carpentry team, how it would physically be put together? Because that seems...
I drew the pictures and gave that to them and told them my ideas. But I'm really one of those people that they're in the shop. They're the ones that know what they're doing. And I kind of let them go just as long as it can rotate well and do things like that. I'm pretty easy that way. Uh-huh. So I don't like to force my own opinions on stuff sometimes. I think it's better when you have a group of artisans who can work it out for you, with you, rather than me seeing exactly what I want.
Like you talked about before with the collaboration,
yeah,
right?
Collaboration is the big thing, yeah. to afford a real mid-century bookcase is ridiculous. Mm. So they built one for me, and that was great.
I saw that. And that's something that the audience should keep their eye out on, because that was built from scratch.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is amazing.
I think it was Mike who built
it. Mike, one of our carpenters, built it, and it's beautiful. A lot of pictures that I've seen of this show being done with the walls, it's like one wall is one house, the other wall is the other house, and it's different. And where did you get that idea from? I don't want to, I mean, not that it's a spoiler, but how did you come to that idea?
I think it was the mashup thing. You know, I did the same kind of research too, and I found it a little too bump, 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 because there's a lot of angles and hard edges to this show too that I wanted to be able to incorporate somehow. Because I start with a model. That's how I always start, like trying to figure out how everything's going to fit together. Everybody did a really great job. The team here was from Tilly to Blair and Mike and Rachel. They're all really great
to work with. Our production team is great. Tilly's our scenic painter. Keep an eye out for the wallpaper, which is not wallpaper, but actually stenciled and hand-painted.
Exactly.
Beautiful. Yeah, and then Blair and Mike are carpenters, and Rachel are our head of props. So Kaylin, How the Other Half Loves was written in 1969, and Vicky already sort of hinted at it, but there's always a choice when a director and designers approach a show. Are they going to set it when it was written? Are we updating it to the present? Are we putting it in, you know, Elizabethan times? Like, you never know what people are going to do. So what was the conversation with Jeremy in the process of kind of setting it where you ended up setting it, and how do you go through that process?
Well, he talked me out of Elizabethan.
Okay. Damn it. That would have been pretty cool.
Yeah, that the bum rolls ready to go. So when I talked to Jeremy about the show, you know, he was talking about how much he wanted it to feel big when you look at the costumes, and not necessarily to feel like, oh, they're wearing a costume in a Halloween sense, but also not to feel like, oh, someone just walked on stage. And so that's why I, you know, it got bumped that time period just a little further. I was really looking at sources a lot from 1975.
Okay.
Because by the time you hit the end of any decade, you're really starting to kind of get into the next decade anyway. So 1969, you're starting to get a little 70s, but you're still a little 60s. It's in that middle ground. And to really hammer home an aesthetic, it was nice to just be in the middle of something. So we just pushed into 1975. And I mean, it's a farce. So if you're going to go with your opera goggles and go, actually, this detail is incorrect.
It's actually from 1973.
Yeah, you're right. And let's get a drink and talk about it. But yeah, so that's why we just pushed it a little bit, just to get that feel, that amp up, so that we can really settle in and enjoy the collars of it all.
So many collars.
Oh, the collars are big on this show.
Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah. I'm excited.
You know, I did all my research. Jeremy is British, and he was young during this time period, so he was soaking it all in. And so I did all my research knowing that if I did my homework wrong, I would be found out. And so, you know, I was watching a lot of British movies from the 1970s. I was watching George and Mildred. I was watching old Monty Python. And so I still wanted it to feel like this play when it was written, just a little bigger. But my research was really focused on getting the vibe of what was a frantic British sitcom of this time period. And then, okay, how do we put that on stage?
Oh, amazing. And is that typically your process in general? Do you have that conversation with the director sort of first off before you go and do your research? Or do your research, have an idea, and then sort of present it and start that conversation with the director?
I like to talk to the director as soon as possible, just because, like how you mentioned, it could be Elizabethan, it could be modern. Right. I don't want to go too far down a pathway with my brain and then talk to the director and have them go, what are you talking about? It's something different. And so I like to ideally read the script. I like to start there, and then I get into my script breakdowns and the technical aspects of it and go from there. But usually I do kind of a, I call my pre-prelims, where I just pull some different images and show them to the director. Because you can talk all day, but until you look at something, you're not anywhere. So I like to really start the visual conversation as soon as possible and then build off of that. And then get into my prelims and my finals and so on.
Right. And you worked closely with our costume team, Jane and Jen. And do you find it depends on the theater how much input or kind of things that they'll present you and you make decisions about them? Or are you bringing them pieces that then they work with? Like, how do you typically find it works, or does it change depending on the company?
It's always going to be a little different all the time. So that was kind of exciting coming here, because I had, you know, a debut.
Yes.
I hadn't worked at Thousand Islands before. And so it's been really great meeting Jane and Jen and getting to know their room and their process. But yeah, to be specific on this one in particular, we had a very tight time budget from when I signed on to this project to when we had to have costumes ready. So we actually started quite quickly. When I was still in the prelim stage, I was sending them collages and they were pulling and shopping. And then we were kind of collaborating together. And then when I got here, we did some pulls from stock and I brought some stuff from Neptune stock and we created those looks from that.
Amazing. Yeah. What I'm hearing from both of you is the watchwords are flexibility and collaboration, because everything is different and you never know what's going to happen.
Exactly.
And things can change, right?
Yeah. From day to day, too.
Just picking up on something that Kaylin mentioned there, this is a co-production with Thousand Islands Playhouse and Neptune Theater. And I just love bringing different parts of the country together in this way and melding these theatrical communities. And Kaylin, I think it's just so fabulous that you were able to bring some of those resources and some of those costume pieces from Neptune to supplement what we have at TIP and vice versa. I think it's to have the set built by TIP that then will then go to Halifax to see it in the fall. I think it's just really fabulous.
Yeah, shout out to Garrett Barker and Helena Marriott for helping me get those costumes from the warehouse. Yeah, no, I mean, it's great. I think we're seeing a lot of co-pros for different reasons right now. And so it is nice, gave me a chance to work with artists who I might not have worked with otherwise. So that's wonderful.
Vicky, you already sort of spoke about this, but Kaylin, can you talk a bit about how the costumes clearly show the difference between the two homes in the play and the three couples, whether it's between their social status or characterization or in other ways?
So actually something I bald-facedly stole from Vicky's designs is the color palette. Generally, with costumes, when you get on, you're often kind of following in the footsteps of the set designer because they have to start so much sooner than you. And that's kind of great, though, because then you know, okay, this part of the world has been built and now I get to play in it. And so when I was looking at what Vicky had so far in the designs, I was like, oh, great, this is where we're leaning. And it gave me that sense of the Phillips and the Fosters, how she and Jeremy had chosen to lean into the bright, chaotic, younger couple who's a little more trendy, and then the more austere, rich couple. So color palette-wise, that was really informed that way. You don't want your couple to blend into their house. You also don't want them to not look like they belong in it. So there's the practical consideration there. There was also a really strong class aspect in this show. So when I talked to Jeremy, he really wanted to make sure the couples look like they went together. He also wanted, you know, British class is sort of this enigma unto itself, which is much more strongly recognized in the culture than here in Canada, where we are like, we're all middle class. And I don't need to go into a rant about capitalism right now. But I will say British class was something that we really considered in this show. And so that led into how I thought about who's wearing what and what are they making fun of also in sitcoms of the time? You know, what's a funny thing that they are like, oh, a rich guy wears this in George and Mildred or something like that. So playing into that and letting, you know, the young couple, they want to be impressive. So they're wearing something that they think is impressive. And then the Fosters aren't trying to be impressive. They just have money. But also maybe they're dressing a little more old fashioned and Bob is a little more audacious, things like that.
Yeah. And I love that element of like the clothes that people choose to wear. And you talk about the third couple who we haven't really spoken about, who are this up and coming couple. So they're trying to move up the social ladder. And it's so interesting in how you consider the way they dress, not just the way they act and the way they speak and what they do in their actions, but also literally the choices of the clothes that they wear, which I think is such an interesting point that anyone who's listening to this podcast will have a kind of a different view on it now that they've heard about that. They'll take a closer look at some of those costume choices. So we always like to end our podcast with what we call our GAN shout out. And, you know, because you're in town for a short time, but a good time. And what have you been enjoying in Gananoque or around the Thousand Islands since you've been here? What's something that you've really enjoyed in town?
I love being down by the water. Or being right on the water is like amazing. There's a couple of great shops and coffee shops along King Street. And one of the ones I love is the Country Store.
Oh, yeah. There's so much good, fun stuff in there, yeah. You never know what you're going to find.
There's a couple of pieces on the set from there already. So that's kind of fun. And the people there are lovely.
Yeah, very friendly.
Very friendly.
I've made it down to, I think there's a consignment shop called Market Vintage on King Street. Agreed, the people are lovely. Big thank you to the many volunteers who have driven me, because there was a hiatus during the show, I've had to come in and out of town. And so big thank you to the many volunteers who have picked me up from Kingston at the train station and dropped me off here, especially to the volunteer who did so at 6 a.m.
Oh my gosh.
Many blessings.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for coming, Vicky. Thank you, Kaylin.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Thank you both so much for joining us. For more ticket information about How the Other Half Loves, please visit us at thousandislandsplayhouse.com. You are just going to love this show.
I agree. It's going to be great. As always, we want to thank Mark Hunt for composing our podcast theme music. Tune in next time and
see you at the theater.